The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Hiring a renovation company can leave you with a lot of questions. Does the firm have the right skills for the job? Is the contract fair? And does it really take 5 months to get a new kitchen? Well, I am Beth Allen. I am a DIY expert, contractor, and host of The Empowered Homeowner. And today we have in studio Nick Cornea from LBK Design Build. And we're going to answer those questions and a lot more as we learn about the renovation process and how to make the best of the experience. So welcome, Nick.
Thank you, Beth.
I'm so glad that you are here. It's wonderful to have you. We have spoken in the last few weeks with one of your designers, Jessica. We have spoken with your COO, who happens to also be your wife.
Right.
And we've learned a lot about your company and the process of renovating a space. And one of the things that I'd really love to learn is, how did you get started in construction yourself? What drew you to it, and what were your origins?
I come from a pretty blue-collar family. And on my mother's side, her brothers, I saw them kind of be involved in the trades and on the blue-collar side of things. So when I was a young teenager, I would, in the summertime, work with my uncle doing welding. Did that for a little while, but I slowly realized I didn't like the smell of welding in particular very much, and that things get hot and you get burned pretty easily. And then quickly shifted over to liking woodworking a lot more. So spent a lot of summers doing construction, working for local general contractors, being a helper, a gopher, go get coffee, sweep up the job site. And that transitioned into, hey, you know, why don't you try cutting a piece of wood, nailing a piece of wood, screwing a piece of wood, and it kind of evolved from there.
So you learned organically. It wasn't like you decided to go to trade school, but you were exposed at a young age.
Correct.
And it took off.
As a kid, I always liked Legos and building things, so it kind of like naturally transpired that way for me.
Yeah, I was that kid too. Even as a girl, I was doing Legos and Tinker Toys and Lincoln Logs and those
good
kinds
stuff.
Of things.
I love Lincoln Logs.
Oh my God, Lincoln Logs are the best. You know, those are a lot of fun. So I would love to talk about the process of hiring a contractor, because I think there are so many misconceptions for homeowners on how does this process work? You know, where do I begin? Do I need a designer? Do I need to hire my own designer? You know, what is the experience of, I have this idea. I've seen it on Pinterest, right? I saw this on Pinterest, and that's what I want.
That's a good start.
You know, and how, well, we talked about that with Jessica, that it does help for homeowners to bring you photos instead of just saying, you know, well, I want white cabinets. Well, what kind? You know, that kind of thing. So, when you have a homeowner come to you with an idea of a renovation project, what is helpful for your team to have them bring to the table?
There's a lot to unpack there. For the homeowner, we find that typically any homeowner that's embarking on a major remodel, it's going to be their first time. So they're typically very, very scared, for lack of a better term, nervous. There's a big defense up there. And, you know, there's a lot of homeowners that will think, I'm going to apply my typical buying process for everything else to hiring a remodeler. So I think the first thing as a homeowner, they should determine in their mind, what type of service are they looking for? You know, is it a small project? Is it a large project? Will it require design? Will it require a concerted effort of a team? Or is it something smaller that I can kind of work directly with the local trade to get the project done? In our case, people typically talk to us about large-scale projects. So they are looking for that extra help with a designer, with a consultant, with a team of project managers, and so on, to help them, you know, consolidate the project into something that's efficient and gets done on time and not, hopefully, a five-month-long kitchen remodel.
Right.
Yeah.
So you focus a lot more on kitchens, baths, and additions.
We do whole home remodels, additions. Okay. We'll do custom homes, custom builds. But our typical day-to-day, what we see about 60% of the time is a kitchen, bathroom models, and usually where they're kind of like all-encompassing with a partial first floor or a whole home remodel.
Okay. Yeah. Joanna and I had talked a little bit about the aging in place experience, and that you're seeing more and more people coming and wanting that addition, the in-law suite, or modifications to accommodate a senior. How is that experience going?
Yeah, that's becoming much more common in today's climate. We think it has to do with the overall market, the economy, interest rates. People are saying, hey, let's just stay in our home and make it work for us to age in place rather than put your home on the market, go buy something that's overpriced, pay a lot of taxes, closing fees, moving, the aggravation, right? So we are seeing a lot of elevators, like right now.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Not 10 minutes from here, we're doing a project where we're doing a four-stop elevator for the home.
Wow.
It's a large home, and they're deciding to stay and live there long-term, but they understand that there might be some challenges.
Mobility issues.
Mobility, yeah. Correct. And then there's another project where buttoning up in contract right now. That's a master suite or primary suite. Mm-hmm. Homeowner loves the home. They have a secondary home in Florida. They don't want to sell their home in Doylestown. So we're going to add a full master suite, bathroom, closet, you know, all that on the ground floor so they don't have to go up the stairs anymore if they can't.
Right. And I think this aging in place renovation is really a worthwhile consideration.
Yes.
Because if you don't have the value in your home per se, or the assets to then make that initial investment into a life care community and then pay the monthly, you know, it is a lot cheaper to maybe spend $150,000 on a renovation and stay rather than $400,000 for a down payment in a community.
Correct. So we're seeing also, aside from those interior alterations, we're also seeing a spike in in-law suite addition inquiries, where those in-law suites become the aging in place addition, let's
the
call
plan.
It. Mm-hmm. So let's say we would spend $400,000 to $550,000 on average to do a large space, like 1,000 square foot plus, but accommodate it with universal design so that everything's ADA compliant, but it doesn't look institutional.
ADA. Yes. There's that fine balance
of,
you know, we need it to be wide, we need the handrails, but we want it to look aesthetically.
And that might sound like a huge investment, but if we consider that some of these assisted living facilities and aging homes, you know, these old age homes, they cost about on average $110,000 to $120,000 a year. So let's say if we lived in that space for 3, 4, 5 years, it kind of pays itself off.
Right.
And we've also added
resale value
to the real estate. Correct.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a pretty wise investment in our eyes.
Absolutely. And as a registered nurse who works in geriatrics, I totally am on board.
And aging in place is typically people don't appreciate the difficulty of those years until they start facing them.
Yes.
And then it's a little bit late.
Yeah.
So we like to see people looking into that earlier on and preparing for it.
Yeah. And you don't realize what you need until you need it.
That's right.
And you know, one of the things that I have actually been telling homeowners is that if they are getting a master bath redone, that they need to make sure that the wall in the shower is being reinforced.
Yes.
For the grab bar.
Blocking for yes. seats and for grab bars.
Yes. Yes. Build that in. Either put it in at the time of the renovation.
Right.
Or at least put in the structural support so that later it's available.
Yes.
Because it's going to happen.
We have done that many, many times.
Yeah. And that's wise. In my opinion, I think builders should just automatically, let's plan, you know, that this is there. Because with the showers that are tiled from floor to ceiling, you can't find the studs as easily as you can when you have that foot and a half at the top in the old shower.
That's right. That's
you know? So it makes it a little bit easier. One of the things I'd love to get your take on, Nick, is contracts for contractors. Because when a homeowner, you know, does find someone and they're like, okay, they've got a decent reputation, I've seen some of their work, their prices in my budget, then how do we move forward? And I've heard so many people say, oh, he's a great guy, you know, it's on a handshake. No, you need to have clear communication about who's doing what and what the project's going.
Handshakes are great for neighbors and friends and family, not for building contracts. I will say, though, there are a lot of people that focus on the wrong thing when it comes to contracts. So some folks will believe having a line item breakdown is what's important. But in reality, there's no real way a general homeowner can understand the overheads and costs that companies and builders go through in order to justify each line item price. So that's not necessarily the most helpful. The most helpful thing, I believe, in a contract is the work scope. It says what we're doing, how we're doing it, where we're starting, where we're stopping, what direction it's going in, what orientation. Those are the important details to the entire project. They really show the story of what's going to go on and what's included and what's not included as far as the price and the contract is concerned. So to homeowners out there, I would say make sure there's a written, lengthy work scope that gets attached to the plans for the contract.
Okay, that's great advice. Before we went on air, we were talking a little bit about the five Ps.
Five Ps, yeah.
So tell us about the five Ps that five you think are priority.
So the five Ps are a credit to a friend of mine in the industry out of the Naperville area in Illinois, and now I believe he's in Nashville. My buddy Brian Sebring. But he attributed the five Ps being people, process, portfolio, past clients, and price. And notice how I put price
at the bottom,
because we feel that price, you know, there's five, so we should say each category should have a value of 20% weight in your decision-making process, right? So people is talk to the, you know, contractor, talk to the consultant, whatever the case may be. Do you feel like there's something there, there's a connection? Do you feel like you're talking to a greasy salesman, or do you feel like you're talking to your neighbor? You know, you should
be
able to.
Do you feel heard?
Yeah, do you feel heard? That's a big one. You know, I've never had a good business relationship in the case where I felt like the person was off in la-la land while we were having our initial discussion, right? Portfolio, look at their website. You know, we're proud of our work. We want to show it off. Do those projects look similar to what you have or what you're inquiring about? Mm-hmm. Look for quality, not just for quantity in their portfolio. Past clients, you know, you don't be afraid to say, hey, you know, we've heard, you know, good things about you. We look on Google, we look on your website. Is it possible for us to talk to a recent past client, not one from 5 years ago when
right,
you were
right.
a three-man show, because now maybe you're a 10-man show, wherever the case may be, or a 10-woman show, right?
In your company's case, you've got a lot of women.
We've got a lot of women. But we want a recent review because that's going to tell us, you know, where you are now
exactly.
in your business cycle, how well you're doing right now. You know, price, like I said, putting that more towards the bottom. It should be an important factor, obviously. That's not, I wouldn't glaze over that.
Right.
But I wouldn't make it your number one deciding factor on who you hire.
Right. Because if you focus solely on the price, you are potentially missing out on those important elements of who is this right person?
One of the most important P's I kind of skipped over was process. Mm. So do you have a process? Do I get a written schedule? How do you guys handle design to contract? How do you handle it? Contract, post-contract into construction. There should be a process in place. That shows that a company has good experience and they have a well-thought-out process with the client in mind as far as having a good, well-thought-out, efficient, hopefully stress-free project.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be a stressful experience, you know.
It's always going to be a little stressful, right?
Right. It shouldn't be overwhelming.
It shouldn't
stressful.
Be overwhelming.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. It's going to, you know, your home is disrupted and, you know, your routine is turned upside down. But it shouldn't be traumatic.
One of the things we talk about across our team is we say, let's try to make every client, every homeowner feel like they're our only client, meaning that our time is just focused in there for them. When they send an email, they send a message through our platform, they give us a call, someone needs to answer them immediately. Make sure that they're heard and make sure that we come back with what they need.
Yeah. Your follow-through from your team is really impressive.
I have a great team.
You know, really
fantastic.
Impressive, wonderful people that I have met. So if I was looking for a home renovation, you would be at the top of my list, but I'm not. But, you know, definitely impressed with everybody I have met at LBK. And
thank
obviously
you're
at the helm, so, you know, everything falls from the head. So it's wonderful. What are some of the challenges that are not typical, but happen during renovations that homeowners can anticipate and how can they best keep their cool and navigate through some of those challenges?
On a larger scale, change orders are always a big one. They're a headache. You know, at our company specifically, we do try to do a best of a job as possible to find unforeseen issues, but we can't go on and do just full demolition, you know, 3 months before we start a project, you know, after a contract signing or anything like that. So I think keeping a contingency in mind of about 10, maybe to even 15% of the total project budget in, you know, in your back pocket for just in case.
Right. So if the homeowner, I mean, obviously we're lowballing, but just to keep it simple, if somebody says, you know, I have 30 grand for this, you know, project that I want to do, they want to spend 27. They want to budget the project for 27 so that they've got extra money aside.
Or even the other way around, saying like, hey, if I want to, if I'm comfortable doing $30,000 for a bathroom remodel, I should really have 35 in the bank to do the 30.
Right.
And then let's keep 3 to 5 on hand just in case we run into an issue.
Right. Perfect. Because there are those things that happen.
There are. They happen all the time.
And it's not necessarily a builder's fault. It's things happen in a home, and it's age. It was the original construction.
That's right.
Things like that. And homeowners need to be prepared.
Absolutely.
You can't push your budget to this is the only cents I have and I can't go beyond.
That's not a wise decision.
Yeah. That's where stress comes in.
Absolutely.
And frustration and disappointment and all of that.
We've run into that in the past, and we have ways to kind of get through that. Mm. But we don't want to, we want to proactively adjust for that ahead of time.
One of the things that I'm curious about is how do you recommend homeowners establish the proper communication with a contractor? I've recommended to people in the past, you know, to be upfront with them and say, what works best? Is it texting? Is it calling? Is it emailing? Like, what is the best procedure for maybe that design process versus the on-site, you know, knowing who is my GC for this project? Like, who is my daily go-to? And making sure homeowners understand how they can make the process easier. Because if you're texting your guy every hour, you know, it's going to be a problem. You know, how can homeowners facilitate communication and so that it goes well?
Well, I'm gonna be a little bit biased in the answer with what we do at LBK. Firstly, I don't think the homeowner should be responsible for initiating the funnel or the channel that we communicate through. That should be done by the contractor or design build firm that you're working for or working with, rather. But ultimately, I'm going to favor software. We're in a technological age. There's no reason why a small contractor to large design build firms, there's no reason why they shouldn't have some sort of a platform, whether it be, you know, a Builder Trend or a Co-Construct or there's a few other ones, that JobTred. But those platforms have messaging functions. And the reason I believe that that's the best is because the messages can come in all the time. They can be seen all the time. The entire team sees it. If the appropriate party isn't there for some reason to answer it, somebody else can answer it for them.
Right.
But this way, the homeowner is always heard. It's seen by the entire company, and someone can get back to them right away. The other thing we want to keep in mind, too, is that on the contractor side, we are homeowners too. We are family people too. I'm a dad, you know, my wife's a mom. We have, you know, we have a kid. We have work hours and then we have off work hours and then we have weekends. So although we love our clients to death, talking about grout color on a Sunday morning, not really a subject we wanted to be discussing through text.
Exactly.
That could wait till Monday, right? But if there is an emergency or if there's something that really does need to be addressed, we see the messages come in and we can handle it appropriately.
Right. So it's, again, I'm tapping into my medical experience. It's similar to the patient portal. You know, that you can post a message, you know, to your provider.
Right.
And a team member will see that and make sure that it gets to the right department, to the right team for the follow through. And like you said, if somebody at 3 a.m. is like, oh my gosh, I have to change my grout color. I can't go with that. And they just need to get it out. They're not texting you in the middle of the night,
correct?
You know, to tell.
Now here's I have another image for you.
Yeah.
So what if it's the nice guy, small contractor? It's like, here's my cell phone number. Call me and text me anytime. The guy I have in mind is a guy who opens up his pickup truck door. Papers are falling out. He's fumbling around, picking up stuff, getting his coffee. I don't want that guy either as a homeowner. You know, it's like, I appreciate that you want me to call you directly and text you directly. But how many other people are doing that throughout the course of a day?
Right. How are you keeping track of all of this?
Right. So having a much more structured system, in my opinion, is a much more reliable, safer bet as far as a contractor to work with regarding communication especially.
Right. Yeah, I think homeowners need to ask about that communication as part of that P process. You know, yeah. is understanding how do we communicate.
Absolutely.
Because I think that is so important. I have suggested to some homeowners, you know, to have the conversations about, you know, using the bathroom at the house, about, you know, maybe a contractor that smokes and where can they go off property to smoke. And, you know, how much cleanup is done at the end of the day? You know, is there an area where they can leave some things that right. aren't a problem for kids or pets? And, you know, and even pets, you know, telling the contractor who's working at your house, my dog is an escape artist, so we have to deal with that. And, you know, I will keep the dog here so that you can bring your materials in and out and we're not worrying about it. Like,
sure.
homeowners need to be a part of this. And they need to have a little more stake and involvement in making sure this goes smoothly.
Yeah, and that's something that we typically address during one of our pre-cons, short for pre-construction meeting. Mm-hmm. So we'd be on site, project manager, anyone else involved, lead carpenter, and we do just a walkthrough about the day-to-day. And we also talk about logistics. You know, where are we going to put the dumpster, the toilet? Where are we entering from? Where are you guys going to enter from? Here's our containment zone. Please don't come in here between Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. We'll open it up on the weekends. We'll leave it broom clean. And then, you know, towards the end of the project, we start getting really, really cleaner and vacuum and all that.
Sure,
kind of stuff.
Yeah. Sure. There's the messy parts.
Yes, there are the messy parts.
You have to just sure. deal with the messy parts. What are some other innovative technology type things that you are seeing people requesting or things you're adding into homes that are noteworthy?
I think a lot of the conveniences out there are, for the most part, out there. I'm not a designer on the newest, latest, and greatest. But, you know, smart technologies with, like, lights and just electronics in the home, we do see requests for that, audio. But nothing really out of this world, you know, nothing like
just from elevators.
Back to the Future, where you have, like, the headset coming down and then your, you know, your dinner gets made in 30 seconds by some machine.
the Jetsons.
Yeah, you know, I think most people want to focus on the experience, the lighting, this, you know, space planning, the flow, how we come in. Those are typically are the biggest focus with our projects.
What are some red flags that you would tell homeowners to look for? Mm-hmm. When they are considering hiring someone, you know, aside from, you know, the fumbling contractor with right. all the tools spilling right. out of the front seat, what are some other red flags that you would be like, just walk away, just don't take the risk?
That's a great question. So I'm going to go back to people, right? So if you feel like you're being rushed through the process, that's a red flag. I would say may not be 100% of the time, but oftentimes if the contractor doesn't have a backlog, we can start tomorrow. There's usually, even during slow times, like for example, August is our slowest time of the year as far as inquiry, phone calls, so on and so forth.
But everybody's on vacation.
We still have a 6-7 month backlog in construction. You know, we couldn't start tomorrow if we wanted to. So that's a red flag. And then in their contracts, if the contracts are really simple and maybe some documents don't line up, they're mismatched. And then when numbers are, I don't like seeing an exact price of $5,000, 000.00. To me, that means that no calculation was in the estimating. Like we, as a business, we have a target gross profit margin we have to make to be successful that transpires into a net profit. And if we know what that margin is, that means we probably use a multiplier to get our pricing basing off of our cost. So there should be some dollars and cents mixed in there to that combination, not just a flat number. I find that as a really, really lazy, rushed estimate. Okay. So that's another red flag for me.
Okay. And when it comes to getting the project started and someone is asked for a down payment, mm-hmm. what are some red flags in terms of what should or should not be a norm for getting that started financially? Because we've all heard the stories of somebody who has paid a contractor, you know, $5,000 up front, and then he's gone. You know, how can right. a homeowner protect themselves?
So let's start with law. So in Pennsylvania, a contractor cannot take more than a 1/3 deposit of the total amount to start a project. So if someone comes in asking for half or anything more than a third, that's a red flag. We can't do that. That 1/3 deposit should be there to cover the majority of the materials. So If your contractor is taking one third of the job, he should also be supplying material. If he's not supplying all the material and wants a large deposit, that would raise some questions for me. Because if there's nothing to be bought, then why do you need so much money, right? And then payment schedule. So I would, it's typical on small jobs like roofing, for example, I would say anything sub $30,000 to see third and a third and a third from these smaller contractors. Larger scale stuff, we want to see a payment schedule, and they could be done usually one of two ways. They're either done by time, meaning we give you a written schedule. It says that we're going to go on for 8 weeks, and so there's an eight-week schedule, which makes sense. Or we see a milestone schedule where it says when certain tasks are completed, another draw is due.
Because we're getting materials for the next step or something.
Correct. Like, or we just completed the work and now we need to get paid on that stuff. But with that method, we want to see things that are very specific and not objective, meaning floor tile installed with grout or without grout. You know, so we want to make sure that's defined.
Okay. So you should be looking for those clear milestones or,
absolutely,
or stages. Okay. That's wonderful. Tell us briefly about your seminars that you offer.
Seminars, I do them about, I would say about 7 or 8 times a year. And I do them on kitchen, bath remodeling, additions. I do in-law suites, aging in place, a mix of things. But ultimately, what I'm looking to do with those is to kind of help educate on these homeowners on these same topics that we discussed today here with, you know, with each other. Just taking a little bit of that fear away and arming homeowners with the right knowledge of, hey, how do I approach a contractor? Where do I start? What questions do I ask? Where do I look? And we cover about, I would say, about a solid 45 minutes of just that alone. And then I go into another about 40 minutes or so of how we do things at LBK, just to give it an example of how we do things as a company.
Right. I think that's awesome that you do that for the community. And these are free seminars that
They're absolutely free. We do benefit from them from time to time. We do get business from them. Sure.
Exactly. That's why you open your home.
Right. But yeah, we do. We offer hot lunch. We have beverages. Sometimes we do them more brunch themed. We've been doing brunches lately, so we have mimosas. So it's a lot of fun. Ladies like to have a few mimosas and sit there and listen to me rattle on about process. I enjoy doing it.
I think it's wonderful. And I'm excited that I'm going to be one of your speakers.
Yeah, I can't wait.
In October, I'll be there to participate in the DIY aspect of some basic things that homeowners need to know.
So, we're very excited.
So, Nick, just to recap, thank you. This is like so useful and informative. And homeowners need to be empowered. And this is really great information. So, folks, I want you to check out LBK on Instagram. They have fun videos. It's really great content. So make sure you check them out. And as always, doing it yourself doesn't mean doing it alone. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Beth. My pleasure.